welcome everyone to the Screamcast episode 34.
I'm your host. 34?
34, man.
You just said 32.
Well, when we were before we started the show, I was guessing we were episode 32, but we're not.
We should be like on 36.
We're on 34. With me as always, Brad Henderson. What's up, man?
Yo.
We were going to have Brian Sauer on the show, but scheduling crap fell through, and unfortunately he's not with us today, but we tried.
I fucked it up. Let's just say that.
I wasn't going to say that.
I totally fucked it up. My main issue is that I don't want to be on the show with Brian anymore.
Oh,
so therefore, I am fucking it up purposely so he doesn't have to be on here.
All right. And you know he's going to totally take that personally, and you just ruined a friendship. Thanks a lot. Thanks a lot, Brad. Well, today we are going to be talking Nightbreed. And I know quite a few
Nightbreed.
Of you have asked, when the hell are we going to cover Nightbreed? So we are doing it now. First, we got a couple things. I wanted to plug some coffee that I'm sucking on right now. I'm just sucking it down. Coffee Shop of Horrors.
Suck it down.
Brad, you found them at a convention or whatever, and you kind of turned me on to them. And I finally purchased some coffee, and I wanted to plug them real quick because I like coffee. So it's coffeeshopofhorrors.com. Check it out. And I am drinking. What am I drinking right now? Netherworld Haunted House. And this shit is good. So anyway, that's it. Just wanted to plug the coffee I'm drinking because I like their name.
We do have
a guest coming on in a little bit to talk all things Nightbreed. Zach Schildwatcher.
Butcher.
He'll correct me on that pronunciation.
Zach Butchered.
He's going to be joining us to talk Nightbreed, but first, there's quite a few Blu-ray announcements that I want to get to, so I'm going to turn it over to Brian.
Do you like what you see?
I love what I see.
Would you like to touch what you see?
Yes. Yes, I would.
Da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
That never gets old for you, does it?
No, it doesn't. We have quite a few. We'll do the past couple weeks here. Mm-hmm. The Squad and the Vincent Price Collection 2, Nightbreed and Squirm have all been released by Scream Factory over the course of 2 weeks. To All a Good Night and Planet of the Vampires have been released by Scorpion. See No Evil 2, the Saska Sisters movie, was released by Lionsgate. Is that a fart?
What?
Wrong Turn 6. Werewolf Mama by Raro Video.
Werewolf Mama?
Yeah, Werewolf Woman. And
should be called Werewolf Mama.
I have no idea why I said that.
That would be amazing. Dude, that would oh my gosh.
And Deliver Us from Evil, which is the director of Sinister and The Day the Earth Stood Still, and
yes,
some other flicks. And then coming
Scott
up,
Derrickson.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. On Tuesday, we have tomorrow, which is tomorrow. There's some steel books that are coming out from Universal of Psycho, American Werewolf in London, Shaun of the Dead. You can probably pick those up pretty cheap since the Black Friday thing. Is that today? Black Friday? Oh wait, no. Wait.
Holy shit.
Black Friday's after...
It's like a month
after
from now.
Thanksgiving.
Yeah, but they start that shit
right?
Way early. Yeah.
And No. They have like a countdown to Black Friday.
I've spent way too much money in September and October. Fuck Black Friday.
I thought Black Friday came after Halloween.
I'm skipping Black Friday
reason.
This year.
And then Doctors and Devils comes out by Scream, and then Moontrap by Olive Films. So, there you go.
Moontrap, is that with Bruce Campbell?
I don't really remember. I think it's an older movie.
I could be getting my Moon movies mixed up.
I'm thinking of Mind Warp, Angus Scrimm, and Bruce Campbell. I think Moontrap's a little bit older, but anyways, seen it. I think I have it on VHS.
It is starring Bruce Campbell. Boom!
There you go, Sean. Man, you're schooling.
Didn't even need IMDb for that shit today.
Whoa. New announcements. Yes. VCI apparently is going to do releases again on Blu-ray, so that should be exciting. Oh yeah, I forgot about Pumpkinhead 2 got pushed up for November 4th.
Pushed up or pushed back? I can't keep track of that.
No, anymore. I think it's November 4th now.
Okay.
So it was about like damn November 8th. I think it was November 18th for about, a little bit yeah. there.
About damn time.
But what the peeper saw is released by VCI on November 18th. I have not seen that, so I cannot speak for that. A Candle for the Devil and Stripped to Kill are released by are being released by Scorpion Releasing, and they are doing another limited edition. Mm. This limited edition thing is starting to kind of be with everything, it seems.
Killing my wallet, people.
Yeah,
I like to plan. I mean, I like to plan for my purchases, but these limited editions, like, get it now or you may never get it. You know.
Yeah, that's the thing. Is like. You know, I don't mind that they're limited edition because I'll get them. But it's you know, for people that, you know, don't have, you know, $30 to fork over, you know, or $30, $60, $80. Because, I mean, every Tuesday we're having a shit ton of, you know, movies released. And it's hard to gauge, will that sell out yeah. during that time? You know, like – honestly, I don't see A Candle for the Devil selling out, but I kind of do see Stripped to Kill selling out
yes.
In that time. So, but we'll see. And, you know, if you don't get them, you can always get them on eBay probably for $1 million. So December 30th, Lionsgate, they're the ones that picked up and they're going to distribute Kevin Smith's Tusk. I spoke about Tusk a couple podcasts ago, and I'm not going to get back into it, but there you go for your diehard Kevin Smith fans. I think people that hate Kevin Smith watch his movies. They watch the movies more than the people that actually like Kevin Smith, just so they have something to bitch about.
Yeah.
So that movie is going to promote itself. That's the funny thing about Kevin Smith. He doesn't need any promotion at this point because the fanboys and the haters just – promote the shit out of these movies because it's bad promotion, but it's still good promotion.
Oh yeah,
I think people fail to realize that sometimes with a promotional material because they don't want to have a bad review. But sometimes a bad review sparks more than a good review because everybody does, you know, people do glowing reviews. It's nice to read the negativity for a second, not, you know, where they're bashing it, of course, but saying, hey, I actually didn't really care for this movie. And I don't know. I think both sides of that is good press for people.
You know what I do every time that a movie like this is released or whatever, like whenever I start reading reviews, like if I start reading a review that's like totally biased or just out to trash it, I basically unfollow that critic on Twitter and just, all right, I'm done with that critic. And I've done that with
a few.
Then
you probably don't follow too many then.
Dude, when The Dark Knight Rises came out, I unfollowed so many critics. Because it was like everyone was out to bash like Chris Nolan all of a sudden, like the tide had turned, and like, and it's that same thing's happening with Interstellar. Like, you know, those critics are coming back out and they just want to bash Chris Nolan and start shit. I'm not saying Dark Knight Rises is a great movie, but it's like you can tell by reading the reviews who kind of has an axe to grind for some reason and just unfair reviews. That's kind of, you know,
yeah,
happened with Tusk, and it'll keep happening. Till I follow only Brad Henderson on Twitter.
Yeah, yeah. I don't publicly bash people on Twitter usually. I mean, I might have said one thing or two things here or there.
Well, I think there's
say I've never done it, but there's like a relentlessness for people. Yeah, like they're like, you know, I remember when Prometheus was coming out. People were just saying, "Fuck Prometheus! It's going to be dumb. Don't go see this." And I'm like, "What the fuck? You haven't even seen the movie yet." Like, how can you gauge something that's going to be bad? And, you know, Prometheus isn't that terrible. It's okay.
It's a very well-made – we may get into this with Nightbreed. It almost – it's a very well-made but very flawed film.
Yeah.
And I just lost half our listeners. They just turned it off.
No, I mean, you support – we'll get into Nightbreed.
I love Prometheus for a lot of reasons, and I love Nightbreed for a lot of – almost the same reasons. So we'll get into that in a little bit. Anything else?
January 13th, Magnolia said they're going to release Honeymoon on Blu-ray. That's on demand now. Honeymoon is really, really good, people. So definitely check that out. It's creepy. And don't go in reading anything because – what it is a surprise, and I have a feeling that a lot of people that would write a review or anything, it would be hard not to give away that surprise because that's kind of what the movie is geared towards. So stay away from everything. Just trust what critics are saying and people that have seen it and watched it on VOD that it is a decent movie and it is creepy as shit. Fright Night, of course, is they were repressing them, but we actually have the date, January 20th.
Okay, nice.
Is when that happens. So stay away from that German release that just came out that's bare bones, because apparently this Fright Night will have some special features on it, because it's like the 30th anniversary. Yep. 30th
anniversary. Everyone who bought that last one are all kicking themselves now.
Yeah, I mean, I was at a horror convention last Saturday, and like they had Fright Night Blu-rays, but it was funny because I was checking them out, and they were labeled $60.
Yeah.
But upon picking them up and inspecting them, they were all bootlegs. Oh, and I was like, damn. I was like, dude, I mean, bootlegs look so good these days. Like, you know, the actual artwork and stuff, like these people actually have, you know, they're not just printing them off on their fucking little computer at home. Like these are like manufactured bootlegs, it seems. So it's really hard to tell, but there's certain things, you know, because I've always been an avid collector of VHS and, you know, DVDs and Blu-rays. So it's there's certain things to look for.
Yeah.
With these films, especially if you already know how Twilight Time packages their stuff. You know, I took one glance and I'm like, holy shit, these are fucking bootlegs. And then on closer inspection, you realize that they were. Same thing as like when Charles Band released his VHS that he found. Everybody remembers that. Were you aware of that, Sean?
No, what's the story on that one?
Oh, shit. No, it's so Charles Band, the guy who owns Full Moon, about a year and a half ago, maybe 2 years, he came out and he said, hey, you know, we're going through our big warehouse and we found these original big box VHS tapes.
Right. You know? I remember now. Okay.
But they were all even amounts. Like they're all 200 of and it was like everything he's done for like, and it was like a course of like 5 years. So I'm like, how did those end up on a pallet all together? And what the fuck? Like, what? How does that make sense? Why would they have cartons print up but not tapes and not everything else? So he said, you know, the box is original and they'll be replicating the tapes. So I had a buddy that bought one and he bought – he said, hey, tell me – because he didn't own any of the original Wizard titles, because Wizard was the label at the time. So I said, you know, I have Headless Eyes, and I have Dream Maniac, and I have the Boogeyman, the big box. And I was like, you know, so we took them, and he bought Headless Eyes, and we put them together, and holy shit, they're fucking reprints. Because you can see where they fucking took off the sticker, like off the old boxes to copy them. Oh, like they literally had like it was like they had a original rental and they pulled off the stickers, then they copied them, because you can see like this little like deterioration mark.
Yeah.
And the fucking copyright on the back, when you flipped it open and looked at the tab, it said 2012.
Oh shit. Whoops.
And then the cardboard inside was clear white. Back then, it's not because of age, it was like a yellowish cardboard these things were printed on. Mm-hmm. So they're right there, and they just look – they were too crisp. They like even cardboard sitting in a warehouse for 20-some years, it's not going to look like that.
Yeah.
You know? But anyways, yeah, so he publicly came out and said, you know, he's kind of full of shit. So they moved on. Our last one was a film that I've been talking about on this podcast for like, I don't know, since we did our – I think our slasher episode – with, what was that, Final Exam?
Yep.
Yeah, I mentioned a movie called Satan's Blade, and it's finally going to get released February 24th by Slasher Video. And I think the reason why this has happened, been on hold for so long, was because I think Jesus, the guy that runs Slasher Video, is doing a deal with Kino.
And oh, yeah.
For help for distribution, because this guy, you know, he's trying to get in there, and you know, he's just one guy that basically had this, you know, DVD line of, you know, hard to find movies, and now he's doing his first Blu-ray, and it's going to be a Satan's Blade, which I think is pretty ambitious. He's doing something that a lot of people haven't heard of or even, you know it existed. So we have that to look forward to. That's a really, really fun movie.
It's a great title and a great cover too.
Yeah, and he's doing like a dual cover, you know, a flip. So that's gonna be pretty cool.
Cool.
And then for Scream Factory has fucking announced over like 20 goddamn titles for October.
All double features too, right?
Most
of them, maybe all except one.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I think there's one in there. I'm just going to go through
Didn't we mention all the Animal Attack ones?
Yeah, we mentioned on the Animal Attacks, but since then, yeah. I'm going to try to pick and choose. I think we mentioned Carrie. We mentioned
the bullshit comedies.
Yeah, the bullshit comedies. The Carrie, the TV version, basically. The sequel to the original was announced for next year. Class of 1984 was the one, I think, that's the single.
Right. Okay.
All these are between March, April, and May. And, of course, we had Escape from New York in there, which that was announced at Comic-Con. Ghoulies 1 and 2, which is a pretty – I think it's going to be a huge sale for them because
yeah. –
Those DVDs have been, I think they did re-release them, but they were out of print for a little while.
They're available on like some, Ghoulies 2 especially is on some like gigantic, like 8 horror movies.
Oh, that's 3.
Is that 3? Holy
crap.
Because
Lionsgate owns like 9-6 Evil 2.
That's right.
Slaughter High, Class of 1999, Chud 2. It's that set that has Ghoulies Go to College.
The DVD transfers have been shit, so this will be fantastic having them on Blu-ray.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the DVDs weren't that bad. They were MGM DVDs. And MGM normally, like, around that time when they started releasing horror films, re-releasing, like, they released, you know, The Burning. I think they did Prince of Darkness, Ghoulies. Actually, the Prince of Darkness DVD was – I remember my buddy was watching it one time. I was showing it to some people, and he looked over, and he's like, is this on Blu-ray yet? And I'm like, no. He's like, man, this looks really fucking, like, good. And I was like, yeah, the transfer is incredible. But MGM like had some flops, had some good ones. So and then another single one was Stuart Gordon's Robot Jocks.
Yes,
that's you know, due out in summer. So that's fun. They just did Dolls, which I watched already. The Dolls transfer is really, really good. So I'm hoping that they. Because there's been some controversy with the transfers and everything like that. I'm hoping they're going to learn from their mistakes in a way here and take a little bit more time. Because next up is Scarecrows and Destroyer.
Yeah.
Scarecrows is a really, really fun little horror film with Scarecrows, of course. And Destroyer, which I'm kind of really curious of how they're going to handle that. Because they doubled that. With Scarecrows, but there's no reason why they should.
Yeah, it makes no sense.
Which I think it's a little weird. But hey, I think mainly because Scarecrows will sell, Destroyer won't. So they're trying to pair it up with something that they know that will sell. Yeah. I think they should have done with that, like Eve of Destruction. They should have put Eve of Destruction and Dark Angel together because no one's gonna fucking buy Eve of Destruction.
Yeah, it seems like they're kind of
even
learned.
Though we covered it on the podcast, which is weird.
Yeah, well, it seems like they kind of learned from 2014, where their standalone kind of just catalog whatever releases. They're like, well, you know, if we double
like
these
Ninja
up,
3, yeah.
This might make you know be better, which I'm fine with. Whatever.
Yeah, and then Tentacles and Reptilicus, I guess, are going to be a double feature as well. Both of those movies, yeah. I mean, it's one of those things where they're just like, I don't know, they're just old little monster movies that, I mean, Reptilicus was in the 60s,
yeah.
And it's like almost, you know, it's like a claymation type thing. It's not very, it's nostalgia for those people that probably saw it back then, and, you know, for the older audience. Tentacles was made in the 70s. It's a little bit more, it's a little I don't know. Henry Fonda is in it. Fucking John Huston. Bo Hopkins is in that movie. So it was like a summer. It felt like it was like a summer blockbuster back in the day. I'm not saying it wasn't. I don't know if it was released during the summer, but it was just one of those like fun, like, you know, animal attack movies, and it's okay.
Yeah.
So, but I'm glad they're getting released, no matter what. I'm not gonna shit on anything.
Who is the actor that did the voice of Gandalf in the Hobbit cartoon back in the 70s? The Rankin Bass, was that John Huston?
I don't know. I never watched the Lord of the Rings animated thing, so I have no idea. I'm sorry.
It's a 1977 TV movie that I've watched since I was a kid, and I recognize the voice. And John Huston was the voice of Gandalf.
And, well, there you go.
Yeah, so I heard his voice when I was watching Tentacles because it's on Netflix, and I was like, "Holy shit, the scandal!" Anyway,
nerd.
Yep, totally. And did you get to the? I have a couple titles here on my list here. Synapse announced The Creature from Black Lake as a 2015 release.
Good job, Sean.
They did that on Halloween. And then also on Halloween, Arrow Films announced the Region B releases of Society and Bride of Reanimator. So I'm looking forward to those. Which I'm not sure how they're going to juggle the U.S., you know, side of things with their U.K. side of things. So I don't know if they buy, you know, the distribution rights. I don't know if they have to pick either or. You know, so it sounds like.
Well, I think
don't
some
throw
of the,
away your region free players is what I'm saying.
Yeah, I think some of their the two titles they've already released or announced for U.S.
Uh-huh.
is they've been released over there.
Yeah, well, yeah, so Mark of the
think,
Devil.
I think
for sure.
I think trying now they're trying to acquire both U.S. and U.K. Rights, so that should be. That should be exciting. Plus, but Arrow has a lot of blues that are region free.
Yeah. Yeah. 2014, they couldn't do region free, but before that, most of their stuff was region free.
Yeah.
I don't know if they redo these contracts every year or what, but it was odd.
I think they did Mark of the Devil was one of them, and something else was the first batch. And also Arrow hit their goal.
Yeah.
Exciting. So they hit their 100,000 or whatever they had. I mean, yep. They're going over it, and they still have
like
you know,
30
2 weeks
left.
To go.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, so it's that's fun. Bill Olson, of course, complained about that, but it was funny. I didn't get into it, but whatever. It's like, you know, I don't really give a shit because I don't care if they're running a fucking campaign. That company will put out Blu-rays, and their perks were fucking cool.
Oh yeah,
you know, like I know it was like $2,500 for, but it was like a lifetime, like every release.
I tried so hard to get my wife to let me do that. I go, I'm like, we have room with the card. Come on, I'll get Arrow titles the next 3 or it was like 5 years or something.
Well, I think the one is a lifetime.
Oh God,
the other one was 3 years, and then there was one for a year. But like you know, for hardcore movie people that have that extra cash lying around, that's a really fucking nice perk.
I know, man. I mean,
It. Yeah, I mean, they had like five available, and they did all five. So there's definitely people out there. You know, I think that was a cool thing, and I'm glad it exists, and I'm glad they're coming over to the U.S. because I love Arrow releases. I love their steelbooks.
Arrow's
yeah, their packaging fantastic. Alone just blows everybody else out of the water, basically.
Yep.
So.
Yep.
But anyways, yeah, Blu-ray announcements.
All right.
So maybe we can get on to the movie now here.
Hopefully. Where's Zach at?
Who's buried in Midian?
Ain't nothing but dead folk.
Somewhere. Hidden from sight. Closer than you might think. Is a place that's not on any map. Midian.
Something's breathing there.
It looks a lot like hell. But they call it home.
There goes the neighborhood.
They're not pretty. They're not neighborly.
Y'all come back now. You hear?
They're not even human. But this time, they're the good guys. From the
imagination of Clive Barker comes Nightbreed.
All right, well, now it's time, Brad. It's time to finally talk some Nightbreed. And joining us is Zach Schildwatcher. Zach, I'm butchering your name.
So good. You got it close enough. That's awesome. That's 12 letters of doom. It's a mouthful.
Schildwatcher. Yeah?
That's what she said. Yes. Yeah, you got it.
All right. Well, Zach, we mentioned you on one of our earlier podcasts with Linnea Quigley. Was that right, Brad?
Yes, we did. We actually featured his short in our comments and everything, and Linnea Quigley watched it, so that was cool.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you publicly for that. That was awesome.
He's the director of a short film called Scum that we featured on our website.
Yep, and it was good, man. I really liked what you did with it, with that, so...
Thank you, thank you. I got two more coming. I've got one in the edit called 7 Minutes. That's going to be coming shortly. And just wrapped one this past Sunday called Eat It Up.
Cool.
So.
All right. Yeah. Well, gentlemen, we are here to talk Nightbreed.
Oh, yeah. I guess.
Clive Barker's, I think this was his follow-up to Hellraiser. Am I right with that or no?
I don't know, Sean. Are you right?
I don't know. I'm asking you guys. You guys are the experts.
Are we considered the experts here?
Well, sure. Yeah. I mean, this was his follow up to that kind of whole Hellraiser franchise thing that he was trying to get going. That's you say Clive Barker and everybody thinks Pinhead and all this, and this was his first kind of foray into what else you got kind of thing.
Right.
Yeah. He's only done like three flicks though, right? I mean, he's done some shorts, but. You know, like Lord of Illusions is other movie, mm-hmm. right? And he's written some things. I mean, you know, a lot of movies are based on his work, but
Book of Blood and stuff like that. Yeah,
yeah, Candyman.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, Rawhead Rex.
mm-hmm. If there's ever a movie that needs to be remade, there's one.
Yes. I wanted to ask you guys before we. Before we jump in here and really dissect the movie, I want to talk about our first, the first time we experienced Nightbreed when we first saw it and what our initial reactions to the theatrical cut from what we can remember. So Zach, I'll start with you.
I first discovered Nightbreed in this, massive video store, and they had this machine set up to a VCR where you would press a button and it would rewind this tape to a certain trailer, and it was like a trailer of romantic comedies and whatever slapstick fart joke movie was out at the time, and Nightbreed was one of the trailers, and you could press the button and it would rewind it and you'd play it, and I must have pressed the button, I don't know, 15-20 times, and just watched the trailer over and over and over again in this little video store, and that's how I became exposed to it, and I just kind of got swept away by the whole mythology of it all when I finally got my hands on it.
Brad, how about you, sir?
I've mentioned before I buy, you know, box lots of VHS tapes, and this is one of them. And it always caught my eye because, you know, that cover that's so iconic where it's Craig Schaefer in the middle and, you know, like eight or ten of the monsters surrounding him. It was that always intrigued me because I was like, holy shit, you know, what is this? You know, it's like, you know, I was going in thinking it was going to be something like Neon Maniacs. Of course, it's not. but yeah, I don't know. I saw it at a very young age and I didn't like it then. And I'm still not a fan to this day.
Uh-oh. All right.
So,
it's kind of sad that this is your last podcast. You know, that Sean's getting rid of you. I mean, it was a good run.
Well, I can't remember when I first discovered Nightbreed. I think it was when I was first jumping into horror, probably late high school, early college, and I, you know, at the video store, and still doing VHSs, and the cover definitely struck me, and so I think I gave it a chance, and I liked it. Like, I'm huge into kind of monsters, makeup effects, creature effects. Fantasy is a huge thing that I love, and sci-fi. So this was like right up my alley, whereas, you know, the story kind of faltered. I was still in it for the kind of the monster mayhem and the effects. So I've always kind of had a soft spot for Nightbreed, and I've always, it's been one of those that I bought on VHS and then I bought on DVD, and then I was excited to unload the DVD and get this on Blu-ray. And then it was my introduction to Clive Barker. So I started looking more into Clive Barker's work, some of his books, and then I actually saw Nightbreed first, and then I saw his Hellraiser movies. So it was my dive into
to go into the Cenobites and all that from MIDI into that.
Yeah, well, I think this is a little like it's the monsters aren't as, you know, scary. Like Hellraiser's like, that shit's for real. Mm-hmm. That stuff's like hardcore, and these were more almost kind of comic booky. You know what I mean? Even though the theatrical cut try to portrays them as more menacing than he intended, like they still, it was still like a very comic booky feeling movie to me. Mm-hmm. So,
well, yeah, a lot more action. Yeah.
But I wanted to mention why I picked Zach to be on the yes. show. Because I, you know, people are probably wondering, hey, I'm a Nightbreed fan. Why didn't they ask me? No, I'm just saying, because it's, you know, Nightbreed's such a popular thing. I mean, it's, but I consider Zach the biggest fan that I personally know, because I've never seen so much goddamn Nightbreed stuff ever than this guy fucking owns. I mean, can you just briefly, like, within like 3 minutes, just tell us what all memorabilia and what you own for Nightbreed?
Oh, good golly. I have, if you're a VHS collector, there's Nightbreed was released with two different color fonts. There's one floating around that's yellow. There's another one's floating around that's green. I have the Japanese VHS of that, the Japanese Laserdisc, the American Laserdisc. Currently bidding on some German and Italian VHS of Nightbreed. I have pretty much all the posters that were released. The English one is probably, like, the English UK one is probably my favorite, the one with the giant face of Baphomet and Decker. I like that Scream Factory picked the Thai movie poster for part of the cover art. And then I have the trailer on 35mm film. I've got the soundtrack on vinyl, CD, and cassette tape. I've got an autographed book of the Clive Barker did the making of and all that. So yeah, I've wasted a lot of time and money on things no one needs.
Yeah, but see, you're in this. Like, you are Nightbreed, Zach.
Yes, yes.
Probably a better actor than Craig Schaefer too.
Oh man, come on, low blow. Yeah.
This was quintessential Craig Schaefer though. This is, you know, this is when the mullet was right, when the leather jacket was like, you could go out in public wearing just a white beefy tee and it was cool.
Yeah,
I guess so. I guess so.
You know, but wait, with that said, this and The Blob would be a fantastic double feature.
Oh yeah.
1988's The Blob.
Oh, because of
the Dylan's feathered mullets. Mullet.
Yes. Yeah. I think there's some leather mullets. Jackets in both of these.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely. Yeah. I'm a fan of the feathered mullet era myself. But I'm glad it's passed, but I mean, goddamn. I mean,
there's a lot of the feathered hair in Nightbreed, a lot of feathered hair.
Yeah, it looks like Cronenberg's wearing a fucking helmet. Like, but yeah, I mean, even there's what's the lady's name that has the quills?
Oh, it's Shona Sassi.
Yeah.
See, this is why we picked you.
I'm looking through the Scream Factory booklet. I'm like, let me find this. Let me, you know.
But yeah, I mean, you could consider that hair, right? Sure. She's covered in it. Which ultimately was my favorite monster in the film because it looked actually like a monster.
Well, that movie's pretty crazy. They have, at the time they had the Guinness Book World Record, I believe it was, for the most monsters in a film. I mean, there's like 300 monsters in that film, and a lot of them have their own backstory and all that. Like, when Laurie starts, going down into the crypts and all, Lyle's Burger, says what's below stays below, and she meets all those cast of characters. Like, the guy with the peg leg, the big belly that comes and screams at her, he has a whole backstory. I mean, it's expounded in the book and Cabal and all those characters come alive in the comic book. And I'm still waiting for the TV series that they've been hinting at for God knows how long.
Yeah, Morgan Creek recently said that they were doing something with that. They're trying to get it off the ground, so we'll see. I mean, I know they've been talking about it for a little while.
It'd be fantastic.
I mean, this is going to be considered something. I mean, even the video games that came out that definitely bombed.
Oh, yeah. But, well, not many people had a ColecoVision or whatever the fuck it was released on.
Well, it was... wasn't there, it was on the Commodore and Atari or something as well?
Yeah, it was like a cartridge-based game, like a series of, like, four floppy disks kind of thing.
Now, do you have those?
No, I never played them, so I don't have that affinity, that kind of tangible collection for them. But then again, I don't have a laser disc player, but yet I own two of them, so... Go figure.
So Nightbreed kind of getting a screen initially was a pretty, I think the fact that they would try to adapt his book Cabal into kind of a monster movie seems ballsy already by the studio.
Yeah.
Zach, do you know kind of the history with how this came from book to film? Like what initially kind of kicked it off? Was it just like, Hellraiser's popular, let's try to see what else Clive Barker has, or do you happen to know any of that?
I mean, Morgan Creek was kicking around, and I mean, they did really well. They were kind of riding that, we're not really art house, but we can do weird stuff kind of subdivision, It was that TriStar was making money, This was, you gotta figure the time frame, this was like when Eddie Murphy was getting that Beverly Hills Cop money, This was a fun time to make movies, and Hellraiser came through, really creeped people out. It was just totally different. I mean, they basically introduced S&M to middle America via these Cenobites, and I could see where any executive would be like, "What else you got?" And Clive Barker's other stuff is great. I mean, if you've ever read like The Thief of Always and that kind of stuff, I think those would be interesting adaptations, but they're also a bit more challenging, I believe, with the subject matter. And, I mean, Clive Barker's stuff is really, one, it's artistically on just a different plane, but there's just so much subtext to it as well. I mean, of him being a gay writer and filmmaker and all that, I mean, that just litters the landscape of the stories he tells. And I think that's really intriguing. You really don't have that a whole lot in horror. And I think that was perhaps something that kind of scared the studio execs a little bit. And I think that might be part of maybe what shook Morgan Creek up. Because, ultimately they got a product that they didn't know how to sell. And that's the scariest thing to any company is, how do I make money with this? And, I think, all things considered, he went back in and he was doing rewrites, added stuff. They wanted more of a slasher film. They wanted more of a horror film. And he was presenting them this thing where this fantasy world where monsters were the good guys and police and religion were the bad guys and things like that. I mean, that kind of flew in the face of a lot of things. I mean, this was came out in kicked out in 89 and 90 was released. So, I mean, that was a whole weird political landscape as well at the time.
Dead air. I don't know what to follow up with that because Zach knows so much.
Yeah.
I just think one thing, you know, for me, I'm not a fan of Nightbreed, and I've given it numerous shots, and this, I just watched it recently, to try to give it another one. This is the first time I saw, you know, with extra footage, which is now known as the director's cut. But in a way, I mean, to me, this story is weak. You know, it's the movie's flawed, but, you know, looking back and seeing how, you know, because I watched the interviews and, you know, just heard even Barker speak in the beginning of the, because on the Blu-ray they have a little introduction with mm-hmm. him, knowing this was supposed to be like a trilogy originally planned from, you know, with Morgan Creek who originally mm-hmm. put it together, but just the fact that the first one failed and then the other two movies were just kind of like thrown to the curb. I mean, it's just kind of heartbreaking to hear, because you can obviously tell that these movies, that this movie alone, there's just so much going on that it's hard to fit it in that hour and a half, hour 40 minutes, even 2 hours.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just, and to me, it's a little overwhelming, because I think that that's the sense, because we just jump from thing to thing, and, you know, knowing that he probably tried to condense this all, you know, I still don't like the movie, but I respect the ambition, and this film's extremely ambitious. And
this film is insane. That's the one thing I love about the Blu-ray, is that people are finally, hopefully, seeing the scope of what they wanted to do. I mean, this was all practical effects on 300 actors in you know, makeup, various degrees of design. Plus, you had crazy and stunts, pyro everywhere. The matte painting is some of my favorite of any film. And then there's, you know, you get to start seeing bits and pieces of this stop motion animation. Mm-hmm. This was supposed to be kind of like a Jason and the Argonauts kind of thing that they were just taking to another level. And you know, they didn't know how to sell it. So they didn't want to give it the money it deserved. They don't want to give it the time it deserved. I mean, there's a lot of, I agree with you. It's very disjointed. You could see where Morgan Creek stepped in and made Barker, you know, add things like, the old man, that whole scene, the junk dealer, when he comes in and interrogates him, you don't need that scene. That time could have been spent explaining more of the mythology. I think the bits and pieces that ring the most true, like that introduction of Decker when he murders the family and then he goes up the stairs to the child, is one of the most creepy and effective openings to any horror film I've ever seen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, that's just pure terror, in my opinion.
So there's when the studio got involved, it sounds like, so as far as the theatrical cut goes, it sounded like during the filmmaking, they were trying to streamline it, and Morgan Creek was getting involved, the money was getting involved, and it sounds like once it got into the editing room, was where I think there was two editors, because they had, it looks like they had the original cut done, and then they screened it, and then the studio wanted something else, wanted them to trim it, and they brought in another editor, who I can't remember, he's interviewed, there's an interview on the
extra there's, disc here. Richard Martin was the first editor, and I mean, the longer film, I mean, the first cut of it was long. I mean, it clocked out at, I think, like 2 hours kind of thing, and they're looking to sell a 90-minute VHS tape with cool cover art, you know, exactly what we all picked up at a mom-and-pop video shop. And, you know, he parted ways, and they brought in Mark Goldblatt, who, there's a great interview with him on there, and to his credit, I think he, you know, made a good run with what he had. I mean, I think that he was put in a really tough position of, you know, fix this mess kind of thing, when there really, I think, wasn't a mess. They just didn't understand how to get what they wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, Clive Barker at that time was still, you know, coming to terms with being more than just an author. You know, this, you know, he wrote and directed this film, and it was, you know, how do I steer this vision that you repeatedly tell me you don't understand, you don't get. It's, and I think it's really engaging with the cut, this new director's cut of what came out and what didn't come out, because I was really intrigued when Horror Hound in Indianapolis announced they had the Cabal cut. I was like, holy hell, they found this footage. Like, we really shouldn't have this in our hands. Yeah. I think that's something that's really cool and gets overlooked. Like, this stuff was just lost. And I mean, the DVD of Nightbreed really is not that great. I mean, in terms of menu or options, there's no real extras or anything like that. So for this to come along and be just a high-grade transfer, I mean, it looks amazing. It sounds amazing. But all the other stuff that they pack into it, I think, is fantastic. I mean, there's bits and pieces, but that I think are intriguing. But of what got made the cut, what didn't make the cut, mm-hmm. but
we still even have another 40 minutes that were missing as mm-hmm. well, because I mean the Cabal cut is supposed to be 160 minutes, and this director's cut's cutting, hitting the 2 hour mark. Exactly. Yeah.
He took out 20 minutes of the theatrical and then put in 40 minutes of alternate takes and new footage into the director's cut.
Yeah.
So let me ask you guys, like, Brad, even though you're not a fan of Nightbreed, I watched both versions, so I got pretty fresh in my memory, like, what was changed and the differences. Like, Brad, did you notice like a difference in quality? Like, did it at least move a little better for you, or did the changes not necessarily even help you with your issues with the movie?
I remember it pretty well. I mean, there were certain things that I did notice here or there. Even like the VHS stuff that they brought over looked really, really good. Like, they did a really great job of cleaning that up. So at certain times, just by the quality of the film, I could tell what was new. But I don't know. It's just like I said in the beginning, there's just so much going on in this movie that it's just a little overwhelming to me. Cause number one, I'm not a fantasy guy. I don't like fantasy mixed with horror. I don't like fantasy mixed with anything. I just don't like fantasy, period. So, you know, I'm a little, a little different when it comes to this thing, because I can't get into that world. Because mm-hmm. I mean, Nightbreed, Midian, of course, is a world, and even though it exists in our world and all that, I just like there's just something about the flow. I guess I just kind of lose interest a little bit when we have the fantasy element come into play. I don't know. It's just and the fact that the film's a little discombobulated here or there, and it changes pace and it changes tone and it changes that even the theme of the film. Because I mean, we have kind of a slasher setup with how Decker comes in, like Zach said. I mean, that scene's extremely effective. It's really, really good. We have like a psychological standpoint whenever Cronenberg is interviewing Craig Schaefer mm-hmm. and or Decker and Boone, like when they're discussing, it's more like psychological horror. Like, he's trying to get him to believe something, you know, he's trying to make Boone kind of go crazy. And then we dive into the realm of Midian with all the monsters and, you know, that. And I mean, I like the switch of pace, but it happens so often. And then we just have this fucking action sequence with fucking soldiers and cops at the end. And then just that completely threw me for a loop. Like, I just, as soon as the guns came out and they kind of have a comedic scene when they're going through the guns with people, I was like, no, I'm still not in this. I'm not with it anymore, you know?
I love that Brad has a beef with the gun scene, but he didn't mention Craig Schaefer and the Tidy Whiteys.
You know, that's another thing, is that he's laying in bed with her and the Tidy Whiteys appear, and I'm like, no, Craig Schaefer doesn't wear Tidy Whiteys. He wears briefs, like long briefs, you know, the tight ones that go down to your
boxer briefs?
Yeah, the boxer briefs.
There. How do you know this, Brad?
I dated Craig Schaefer for a little while. We had some good times, but it just mm-hmm. didn't end well because I told him all those years that I actually liked Nightbreed. And then one night I got drunk and I let him know. It was actually after we recorded the Burning episode. I let him know how I really felt about Nightbreed, and it's over.
You just show up with a boombox playing the Danny Elfman soundtrack.
Thank you for mentioning. That's the other thing that really, really gets me, is I don't mind Danny Elfman's scores. He's a great composer, but this score just doesn't fit anything. like in this movie for me. And honestly, the whole time, and I wish I never watched the original Batman because that's the only thing I think about.
It was all that same time period.
I mean, it was like right back. He did this like back to back, and I'm just waiting for the Caped Crusader just to pop up, you know, and just start killing stuff, people.
You got to give Danny Elfman credit for it because the bar scene where Lori meets her new gal pal and all that country music is Danny Elfman as well.
Oh.
So well, that's interesting. Well, he did a good job on that. We'll just say that. But
well, all right. I'm gonna talk a little bit about what I like about the director's cut.
We're okay.
Spin things more positive here.
I was not trying to be negative.
No. You're voicing your opinion. That's fine. No, you're not being mean spirited at all. Because I do have issues with. I mean, I had issues with the theatrical cut, of course. It was easy for me to kind of doze off during the theatrical cut because it was just so – it would go more than the director's cut. It would go from one thing to another like lightning speed. Like 1 minute he's in the office with Cronenberg's character, whatever his name is. He gets the pills and then all of a sudden he's walking out in front of a truck. You know what I mean? And then he's in the hospital and it's just boom, 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 boom. And the next thing you know, he's in Midian. It just goes so fast that it's hard to even – kind of gather what's going on. So I always had those issues with the director's cut, but I still liked it because for me, like I said, the monsters saved the day for me. But the director's cut, I feel like pads out the beginning to bring us to Midian a little smoother, have a little more of a smooth transition. And for us to kind of understand like the relationship between Boone and his girlfriend. Was that Lori?
Yes.
It kind of gives a little more heft to their relationship. And then you get to see that he has to see her kind of one last time in the director's cup because she's performing at this club. You find out she's a singer and everything. And so it kind of, for me, eased the transition into Midian. And then I was a little more open to exploring the monsters and kind of beefed up Lori's character a little bit more. So as a whole, like I really dug the director's cut, and for me, I think it's the definitive cut. I think if you're gonna watch Nightbreed, like I believe you should watch the director's cut because it's just a better movie. Is it a perfect movie? Is it, you know? No, it's not. It definitely has a lot of flaws, and I think Cronenberg for me is kind of a poor actor. He's not that great. He does okay. The Danny Elfman score does seem out of place at moments, but there's certain times, like the main theme I kind of like, it's when it starts going into the oompa, oompa, you know, all the cymbals and everything, that it's like, you know, a little bit overbearing. And then I'm glad that they in the director's cut, Doug Bradley actually gets his own voice back, you know, as he's not overdubbed by some German.
Yeah, they went through and did some new ADR. If you get a chance, there's some great stuff with the character Rachel, the one that turns into mist.
Oh, okay.
If you hear her, she's got that kind of Eastern Bloc European sounding voice. Like in the behind the scenes, like you can kind of hear her original voice, and it's kind of like a cross between like a soccer mom and a valley girl.
Hmm.
So there's like some really fun stuff to check out there.
Yeah. So as a whole, like I really dug the director's cut. I think it's incredible that we have it. And I think, like Brad, you said you can tell when the different footage was used. I couldn't tell at all. I know that they actually they used all the film elements in the process. I believe they did do some grab some audio from the VHS, maybe, but it's I couldn't tell.
I mean, there's just a couple. It's just the clarity of the image.
Maybe
is that I mean, it wasn't anything like, oh my gosh, this is, you know, awful.
Yeah,
but it was like, you know, there's a few moments where it's like it's not as clear because I mean it does look different. It does change, but it's nothing bad.
Speaking on that, like that last scene when it's all of the survivors in the barn. With the Blu-ray, I think you can distinctively see a lot more of the monsters of the characters that survived in those back shadows that were blown out from, you know, VHS and what have you. It's really an interesting thing. I think that the stuff that they added, you know, you have that whole Ann Bobby club performance. I mean,
yeah.
It's Clive Barker. He put a fucking musical number in a slasher film. And it's great. I mean, he's running at a level then that I think we're still getting used to now with, if you compared him to, say, like Ryan Murphy with like what he was doing with American Horror Story, mm-hmm. you know, like you throw the music out there, you throw horror elements and then into fantasy. Like, I mean, that movie shifts gears in a lot of different ways between the psychological to the fantasy. And you can see how it influenced a lot of people. I mean, that fantasy element, you dumb all this down, you make it PG, you have Fred Savage and Little Monsters. You know, yeah. and
nothing wrong with Little Monsters, though, guys.
No, but I mean, it's kind of that same world, that same kind of thing. But even Cronenberg, you know, he took his resurrection, and I mean, that was kind of his little nod and Videodrome with the VHS tape.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, it's an intriguing thing. The stuff that they added, the stuff that they took away. I think that the ending, making it a bit more Romeo and Juliet. You know, that whole star-crossed lovers of bringing them together.
I did dig that. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that the most engaging thing that they addressed was the fact that with a monster movie like this, you have so many monsters, and you want to root for the monsters. But the big thing that Nightbreed suffers from story-wise is there's too many barracudas mm-hmm. and not one great white shark. And you're meant to think that Decker's the bad guy the whole time. And then you throw in Ackerman, you throw in, you know, you throw in the priest. And in this cut, the priest has a bit more of a role, a bigger story role. And, you know, his turn, especially when they're trying to move Baphomet away. I think that's interesting. And I think what they were playing with to capture all that, you know, shooting in miniature, shooting, you know, on studio sets, all the matte painting and stuff like that. So
I think, don't full characters like change between the director's cut and the theatrical? Because speaking of the priest, I don't know if I just am crossing things here, but he seems to have more of a redemption story in the director's cut. Am I getting that wrong?
Or did I misread it? Yeah, we're introduced to him as the, kind of the drunk, sharing a cell with Boone on the opposite side. And, you know, the Sons of the Free start knuckling up. You have that ridiculous Annie grab your gun kind of scene.
Mm-hmm.
And they all roll out, and then he sees what's going on, that there's women and children and all that. And he wants to kind of be part of it, which is kind of weird that he's willing to throw away his loss in faith to embrace something new. And then, of course, he's scalded. He's turned into, you know.
Yeah.
Whatever that is. It's really weird. His that character always kind of stood out to me as being kind of weird.
It's kind of shoehorned in mm-hmm. to the narrative, definitely. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the end, I really like the ending to the director's cut more than the theatrical. And I don't want to give anything away. I want people to be surprised when they watch the director's cut for sure. But
I think they probably could have combined both, but I think that that's something that people will pontificate forever, which I think is great about this. You have the director's cut, you have the theatrical cut, and they're just so vastly different. It's not like this thing came out from you know, Shop Factory, and they were like, oh, here's extra 4 minutes, and scenes go on a little longer. I mean, these are, you know, fully redone, fully remastered scenes that drastically change the story around, in my opinion. I almost consider them two separate films at some points.
Yeah, well, which is why I'm glad I got the deluxe set, and mm-hmm. I have like mixed
feelings. What number did you get?
I got number 9,606. Is that not cool? Is that if you get an earlier number, you're cooler? Is that how it goes?
Collectors, that's how it is. I remember when people are pre-ordering that, they were like, oh, God, man, I really hope I get something under 100. What the fuck does that mean? Who gives a fuck? It's a sticker.
Exactly, it's a sticker. Now,
what number did you get, Zach?
I care, stop it.
What number did you get?
I got 58.
Oh, man. See, now I'm jealous. Before I didn't give a crap, but...
Zach was on top of that shit. Were you, like, sitting there just, like, refresh?
Kind of. I mean, I will say this, and I know a lot of people kind of brought this up with this release, was it was a little pricier. This was a pricier Shout Factory release. And, you know, I think that personally for me, as a fan, as a collector, I think that, you know, the fact that they got this really rad art from Joel Robinson, you know, the new cover art, all the extras that they put together, I think that for something that the guy that they kind of put this all together, Mark Allen Willer, you know, he did some awesome work, you know.
It's tough because I was talking with someone about this the other day. I think if you're a casual fan of Nightbreed and you don't care about the theatrical cut or you know, if you want to own the definitive version of the movie, you don't care about the other stuff, the $20 version is great for the money you're spending. For $20, you're getting a packed Blu-ray. Mm-hmm. Cause the most important special feature, I think, is on the director's cut disc, the 75 minute documentary. Mm-hmm. Where everyone basically sucks each other's dicks. But other than that, I mean, you know, it's kind of a...
Oh, I thought we were having a kid-friendly episode here.
We're talking Nightbreed. It's not kid-friendly. But everyone's kissing each other's asses. It's an okay documentary. I wish there would have been more to it. But other than that, like, you're getting probably the best special feature on that disc. And if you don't really care about the theatrical cut or deleted scenes, for $20, you're getting... You know, you're getting a fantastic disc. Because I had people, like, kind of bummed that they weren't... I can't spend the money, and they're all bummed. Like, well, I guess I got the $20 version. But I think if you got that version, you're fine. You got a great disc. For people like me, like, when I pre-ordered on... When it hit Amazon, and when they first launched it on Amazon for pre-order, it was, like, $60 or $55 or something like that.
Mm-hmm. 55. She kept on going on and on.
Because I snagged it for that price, and that was great. And then it went up to like 71, and it hasn't dropped down at all. So
yeah, you can still get it on Family Video for that. I'm just saying.
I'm talking to Amazon right now,
no one fucking gives a shit about Amazon anymore.
I do, but anyway. So I got it for that price, like. So paying $55, I think I still feel good about that. But once you go over that, I don't know if I can tell somebody who's just kind of a casual fan and not a collector, mm-hmm. you know, yeah, $70 is a good price. Cause is kind of pricey. You're basically spending an extra $40 for a few deleted scenes, a few short little interviews, and the theatrical cut.
Well, if you ordered through Shout Factory, you also got, the poster art.
There you go. Well. So you can sell the poster and then make... No.
Oh, God.
I'm pissing off collectors here. Sorry.
Yeah. But there's also kind of the thing that they, you know, they had expanded the number that they were going to release. You know, if I remember correctly, I believe it was going to be 5,000.
Yep.
And then they expanded it to 10,000. And then I was like, oh, okay. You know, I'm glad there's so many fans of this film. But yeah, you know, the collector in me definitely jumped out. I'm worried that... This is what's going to test the waters for other releases to be like, well, if we charge this much, we're going to charge this much. Because it reminded me a lot of like when you could afford Nikes as a kid, they were like, you know, $40 sneakers. And then all of a sudden, oh, what's a Jumpman? And sneakers are like, you know, $200. So,
yeah. Yeah, I don't know. They said that it was pricey just because so they can license the theatrical cut. So that was rolled in there. But then again, if they doubled the amount printed, that price should have dropped. You know what I mean? And, you know, I don't know how these deals go. But yeah, it was funny because when this was first announced, like Scream Factory announces Nightbreed. There's much rejoicing. They announced the Cabal cut, director's cut. There's a ton of rejoicing. They announced two separate versions. People are kind of like, whatever about the separate versions. You know, who cares? Then they announced the price of the limited edition. Everyone's, you know, then there's grumbling, and then they announce that they're doubling it, then there's grumbling. You know, I think that's just this release, they've seen like the highs and lows of kind of their fans, you know. And this one, I think more than Halloween, because Halloween, they can kind of shift some blame over to Anchor Bay on that. But this one, man, I feel like they got hammered with complaints, you know what I mean?
Before it was released.
then they had the mix-up of where they were sending out the third disc and all that. And yeah,
they sent the limited editions out to people that ordered the standard.
Yeah.
And then they requested them back.
Yeah. Which, I mean, here's the thing. If you didn't pay for it, I mean, I don't know. I send it back?
It's a slippery slope.
Yeah. But yeah. I think that, you know, there was definitely a big meeting Monday morning at Shout Factory.
Oh, man.
You know?
Somebody didn't have a job the next day.
Yeah. God damn it, people, we're not going to have this happen when we release Pee-wee's Playhouse on Blu-ray.
But I mean, even though I think the $80, I didn't pay the $80 for the limited edition, because, I mean, honestly, like I said, I saw it three times before this. I wasn't a fan, so I wasn't going to go put forth the extra money.
Yeah.
And, you know, luckily I got a screener copy, because, man, it's going to be hard for me to pull the trigger on anything Nightbreed at this point. But justify the price, you know, hearing everything, which is, you know, it might be a moneymaker just because they knew they can get the money. Or, I mean, from the sounds of it, if it's all true, tracking down this footage, repairing it, doing everything that they did, getting the licensing from Warner Archives, basically, mm-hmm. Warner Brothers, getting those rights to release it, because they're the one that's, you know, did the DVD over here. Mm-hmm. You know, it seems like it was a very, very, very costly release.
Yeah.
So justify, yeah, maybe a little bit. $80, a little steep, but I mean, if you're going to think that everything that they're going to make money on, and also the packaging, I mean, the box, you know, everything that's there is,
but it's a great packaging. A lot of work. I mean, the booklet that they include in it is, I think, very thorough. Mm-hmm. I mean, you have some great photos, so I mean, people that know Nightbreed casually, they'll be like, oh, I've seen this before kind of thing. Like, the hardcore collectors are like, oh, here's the one thing, you got to check this out kind of thing. So I think I think they did a really good job of being inclusive. I think that tracking all it down and all that was definitely an arduous journey. I salute anybody that was part of that.
Yeah.
Because I can't think of, you know, other films that kind of fall into this pantheon of what the fuck happened cinema. You know, like, where, you know, I mean, this is almost like Island of Dr. Monroe kind of thing. You know what I mean? Where it was, you know, I'm surprised they didn't replace Greg Schaefer halfway through the film kind of thing.
Only if they did. Only if they did.
Get you a mullet wig, Brad. That's what we need.
There you go.
Well, I mean, it's fucking Craig Schaefer. I mean, there's, like, no one that can vouch for the guy. He played in Turbulence 2 and 3 as different fucking characters. Like, I mean, I don't understand. Like, it's fucking Craig Schaefer.
He was in the program.
He was in that one, like, Eye of the Storm movie that was okay. But other than that, oh, and he was in some other, like, Rutger Hauer film. I read rumors that Hauer was one of the candidates for Boone at some point.
Oh, really? Okay.
Hmm.
Yeah.
That would have been a different movie.
That would have been a better movie.
I think he's all right. I think you're being a little bit hard. I mean, he's okay in it. Like, I don't have any problems with him in this movie at all.
Tidy whities.
I'm just saying, you know, Craig Schaefer in general, not in this
film. Oh, yeah, no, everything else he's been in. Like, I finally went to IMDb, and I'm looking through his stuff, and I'm like, yeah, I've heard of, like, nothing. I
mean, yeah, he had a little bit of a career.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that's pretty much it. I mean, people know who he is, but he just doesn't do the films that he used to. And how awkward and weird was it to put fucking, you know, David Cronenberg into this fucking movie?
Well, they only had so many Cenobites they could recycle.
You know, but I mean, he always played like cameos, but I mean, he has a substantial part in this film. I mean, the only other thing that I know that he played a more lengthy part in was fucking Jason X. He played one of the doctors. But, you know, he's just always a little, but
he's better in Jason X, I'll just say
yeah,
that.
He's way better than Jason X. But I don't know. I mean, for what he had, for the big role that he has in the film, he wasn't that bad. He comes across as very monotone, I mm-hmm. think, is the problem. Because, like, everything he says is in the same...
Just in the same voice, just like this, you know, Midian. You know?
Yeah. There's an engaging thing in the disc where they, in the deleted scenes, the alternate scenes and all that, where they have Decker talking to his mask. And oh, wow. I think that that was something that a lot of fans, that's something a lot of fans will clamor to and hang on to, where they're like, you know, well, Decker was the insane one, this, and which is right. a great character, you know, a psychologist that's insane as well.
Yeah. Well, but, the mask is badass. I love the mask.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that whole look is great.
Yeah, but there's I think the Detective Joyce as well. I think that, you know, people don't give him a lot of credit. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's kind of, he definitely steps in and he's that poor man's Dr. Loomis kind of thing. There's just so many characters that pop in that I feel could have been combined story wise, yeah. But
yeah. Can we talk about Ann Bobby, who plays Laurie?
Oh yeah.
You can talk about whatever you want.
No. Well, to me, like, she was kind of an odd choice. She's a bit odd. Like, especially if you watch that documentary, she is out there. Like, I don't know. Like, she's just way too excited about her role in the movie. I think this was the biggest movie.
Maybe because she's fucking proud of it.
Yeah.
Well, she says that this movie basically caused her to go into animal rescue because she rescues that little creature, you know, that turns into a girl, you know, in that scene, Babette. And that caused her to go into animal rescue and things like that. But
you're saying she thinks that animals are little people that'll change?
Yes, maybe.
Maybe she has that hope.
We need to make that movie.
I just didn't think she was that strong as an actress in this. Like, you know, like even with the more expanded role in the film, like, you know, she was another issue that I had with. She's okay, but, you know.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Gosh, well, you're just hating.
I'm not hating. I'm just, you know.
I love that Aunt Bobby definitely kind of championed that whole Occupy Midian movement, which I thought was a really engaging thing. Like, I've never seen fans clamor so hard for something outside of, you know, like popcorn or, you know, the whole Halloween Blu-ray and all that, you know. So people raising their voices for people to find this footage, put it together, and say that they'll buy it.
So did she help lobby that then?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, okay. I take that back. Maybe, you know.
Oh, here we go.
But here's an interesting thing. Is speaking on a point from earlier, is that the character that she plays of Lori is, you know, it's this heterosexual relationship between her and Boone. When you think about it, if you think about the homosexual undertones of Nightbreed, mm-hmm. of why is Decker so obsessed with Boone? That, you know, what causes that schism in his brain where he has to kill people, kill families, kill breeders, because it's something that he can never take part in and be a part of. He can't have a family because of his homosexual attraction to Boone.
Hmm.
I mean, that's a theory I've talked about with people for forever. And there's that whole subtext of all of that, that, you know, and if you fall down that rabbit hole of thinking of, you know, you throw those labels out, which at that time, I mean, this is, you know, pre-90s. I mean, you had the AIDS scare and all that still going strong. The war on drugs was still kicking up steam. So you offer this idea of Midian, this de facto purgatory / place of acceptance. It's not really heaven. It's not really hell, but that's where all the monsters are. That's where all they take the pain away. And so if you really think about Boone's struggle of, you know, wanting to be accepted and, you know, you throw it at that backdrop of wanting to be accepted for being gay kind of thing, he's going to go where a bunch of flamboyant characters exist, you know. you know, and Aunt Bobby still wanting to accept him and make right. their relationship work. And then you throw redneck middle America at it all, and you're just like, oh, okay, yeah, this is like Truman Capote with gallons of fake blood and latex.
Yeah, yeah, it's definitely who was we were under Republican control. Is that the right word? In the 90s, right? Was that Bush? Is that one of the Bushes? I don't know. I'm politics get me all. I don't give a crap. But
it's the Illuminati. Was it a Bush? The Illuminati killed Nightbreed.
Why don't you just say Lizard we people. Were under? Basically, you just said we were under Republican regime. That's what it just felt like.
So it was George H.W. Bush.
Bush was in office from 89 to 93. Yes.
So there was definitely, and he took over from Reagan. So there's, because you can tell, like, the way they portray, like, the gun toting rednecks. You know what I mean? There's definitely a jab at that. You know,
mm-hmm.
Let's get our guns and take care of these people who are different. You know, type. Undertones. Not necessarily undertones, even.
Yeah, I think Nightbreed offers a more realistic portrayal of how Clive Barker feels about society and religion than what he was putting out with, say, like Hellraiser. Hellraiser is like, you know, and Jesus wept, and everybody's like, oh, that's awesome. Like, well, you know, what's he saying about Christianity and all that? I think that one of those sequences that's also extraordinarily powerful is when Babette holds Laurie's hands, and you have that shot of all the skulls in the wall, their eyes glow white, and you cut to the flashback of the Crusades, of, you know, those guys in the black pointed hoods chopping off heads and setting fires and all this other stuff. I think that that's where, if they did do a series, that's where they could pick up from. Or if they were originally stuck with the idea of doing a trilogy, you could have done a sequel and a prequel kind of thing.
Yeah, that's the thing about Nightbreed is maybe that's why people have been fascinated with so long, is because there's so much going on beneath the surface. And this is almost kind of like an origin story film, you know what I mean, where he becomes Cabal, right? So if there was more movies, there's a treasure trove of things you can go in, like different directions you can go with these characters. You can bring characters who are in the background up to the surface. The guy with the tentacles that come out of his belly, like, I love, like, that character's not in it for that long, but I love that character. You know what I mean? He really stands out. He looks very Tim Burton-y. Surprising.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, you got Danny Elfman, you know, playing all your music, there you go.
There's Mr. Moonface guy.
Kinski, which, yeah.
I feel like he had a bigger role in the theatrical cut. I felt like that before I rewatched it, but I guess he really doesn't. I don't know. For some reason, I felt like he was more prominent.
He had a bigger role in Basket Case 2.
Okay, well, I mean, I haven't seen Basket Case 2.
I like that he found work with McDonald's in the in the Mac the Knife series they ran.
It's hilarious. Yeah, Moonhead. I think it's one of the he stands out, but it's not one of the greatest, I think, looks. It's just very odd.
Is his name Moonhead?
No.
It's Kinski. No.
Yeah, I was about to say.
Yeah.
For me, it's Moonface.
So, see, there's Half Moon in Basket Case 2, because Basket Case 2 has those monsters as well.
Mm-hmm.
No big deal.
Hmm.
Yeah, but those are kind of on par with, like, Alex Winter's Freaked.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree, yeah. Freaked is really good. But since we're on the subject, just a little you know, side story, because a lot of people probably don't know this, but David Image, the guy that played Stephen Flyboy in Dawn of the Dead, didn't play in many movies in his life. It was like Dawn of the Dead and like two other movies. But he was Half Moon. He was the moon faced guy in Basket Case 2, oddly enough. But yeah, there you go. Now you know.
The more you know.
The more you know.
Well, gentlemen, I need to start wrapping it up here.
Well, I guess you're done talking about Nightbreed. I wasn't.
You're not. No, I do have to get going soon. So, was there anything else you guys wanted to bring up about the movie, about this set? Like,
I would let Zach handle that.
Yeah.
I think if you get a chance, you know, definitely dig into the extras that are offered on both. I think that, you know, it paints a picture of what really could have been, you know, especially with, you know, the stop motion that they had planned, the puppetry and things like that. I mean, this film had a scope beyond what I think a lot of people realize. And I hope that they kind of remember, because you had a studio step in and say, no, we want to paint by numbers slasher kind of thing. And you had an artist really saying, it's not that, it's something else. And it's, I think for independent filmmakers nowadays, this is something to check out and realize, like, what can you do? What are some of these old school tricks? You know, puppetry, matte painting, you know, shooting in miniature, shooting in sets and things like that. And the control that you need to have to deliver your final vision. Because, I mean, this is 20 plus years we've waited to see something like this. And I mean, you have that intro with Clive Barker, and it's that was something that was just as striking to me, that if you watch the VHS tape, he introduces Nightbreed. And it's him sitting in a director's chair, you know, they've got the fog machine going and he's in his best black collared shirt kind of thing. And, you know, that's, you know, they did the same thing again, and it's like, it's kind of eerie to see someone be able to revisit something and not do it in a George Lucas kind of way, like, oh, I made Jabba walk. You know, this is something that, you know, should be revisited and to check out. I mean, to play with tone. I know that it's all over the place, but to show that you can have a musical number in a slasher film, you can, you know, you're allowed to play with subtext and you know.
Well, I feel like stuff. I feel like even more now with the director's cut, it's even less of a horror film. Like, I think it's more of a kind of urban fantasy, you know, urban fantasy romance, you know, more than anything else.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the horror elements are there, but they kind of take even more of a back seat, I feel.
Yeah, I'm just really glad they didn't give it the Twilight looking cover that they did when they released Near Dark. You remember
that?
Oh, God,
that was horrible. That would have been
awesome.
I had to reprint. I printed a custom cover for Near Dark because
that best cover ever.
Ridiculous.
Love it.
Brad, it would have been awesome if it was Boone lovingly embracing Decker. Then you're on to something.
Well, if they would have got, if they would have asked, I could have sent him pictures over of myself and Craig Schaefer, but, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. But one thing I did want to mention, because, I mean, all through the film, especially, you know, the underground, when they're in Median, there's, like, a bunch of just, you know, like you said, there's so many monsters, and you barely get to see most of them. Like, some of them are, like, in a flash.
Yeah.
And that reminds me of a lot of, Del Toro's, like, Hellboy. Like, when they're in the city,
yeah.
And we're just walking around, and, like, we want to stay with the monsters, because we just walk by them so quickly, you know? And I remember reading about Del Toro. He had when he was doing Hellboy 2, he like basically demanded for this huge monster with like all these fucking like tentacles waving everywhere, and like it was just this very like elaborate suit that they were doing, and it was costing, you know, like $500,000-$700,000 to do this fucking suit, but it wasn't even a part of the movie. It was just something in the background. And that reminds me of something like this, because there's so much that is going on. You know, you kind of want to spend. I mean, some of the monsters look okay. Some of them look really, really good. But that's kind of what that reminds me of, is, you know, taking the time, creating a world rather than just, you know, your three or four characters. And much like George Lucas did. I mean, there's in Star Wars, there's tons of characters all throughout. Yeah. And I don't know, it gives that setting. That's one thing I did like about this film, even though we didn't spend that much time like walking around. Because, I mean, traditionally in a popcorn summer movie, they would have him come down and someone would walk him around and introduce him to all the quirky characters, like in Total Recall or some bullshit. Mm-hmm. But like this, he just kind of drops in and gets to, you know, you just see things so quickly.
Yeah.
That's why I want to know if the Cabal Cut actually spends more time down there, and we get to know a little bit more of these. Now, have you seen the Cabal Cut, Zach?
I haven't. I know there's talk that it might get released, but I don't. Here's the other thing about Cabal Cut. I don't know if I would want to see that. That would be, you know, they took the theatrical cut and added everything that they found into it.
Yeah.
And I can only imagine one being distracted by jumping from quality from, you know, whatever they grabbed it, whether it be from VHS or whatever.
Well, they just took everything in the kitchen sink, every cut scene ever, and threw it all in there. And, yeah. Like, you don't, you know, every movie has to have a cutting room. Like, you have to cut. You can't, you know, no one wants everything in there, because you need to kind of hone it down and whittle a movie down to to kind of flow properly. And I think that's what – I think they did a fantastic job of allowing Clive Barker to actually redo his movie, you know. They gave him all those scenes and said, which ones are you keeping? And I'm not sure how they did as far as the restoration. Like, they didn't restore all the footage. They only restored what was needed, it seems like, for the for what he wanted to do. But I'm glad that it's only 15 minutes longer than the theatrical, but there's so much more that's new and a whole new tone, you know. I think.
Yeah.
So
you think. Yeah, but you
I think, in
know.
My opinion, Brad.
You don't know.
Well, there. It seems like there are still this limited edition. There's still copies out there. It would have probably sold out if they kept it at 5,000, but it's still out there. It looks like the lowest price I've seen so far is like $59.99 at Best Buy.
Wait, Best Buy has this shit?
Maybe Best Buy online, maybe .com. All I know is my Best Buy has had the same three boxes of the Halloween set sitting there for the all month. They have not moved.
Wow, dude, that's even crazy. You get that shit at your Best Buy because we don't have anything like that. Right.
Well, we're in Southern California, so we're, you know.
Oh, so you're better than me.
Yeah, basically.
God damn it.
But, you know, I would steer most of my friends who are horror fans but not Nightbreed fans especially. Like, I've steered them towards the single disc set because that's $20. That's manageable, and I highly recommend the theatrical cut, you know.
I thought they did a great job. I mean, you know, the stuff they did with Doug Bradley, bringing him back into the studio.
Yeah.
I mean, the level of care that they put into it, I think the stuff looks great. I mean, the new ending, you know, them backlit, and I mean, it's really strong. I mean, if that's the kind of work that the Shout Factory is going to be doing with future releases,
yeah, I hope so.
Then I applaud that wholeheartedly. I mean, if that's, you know, like with Popcorn, or like a film like Popcorn deserves that type of treatment. Like, there's other films that I would love to see get that kind of transfer and that kind of love and that kind
class of 1999.
So, absolutely. Holy shit, I fucking love that flick.
Yeah, that'd be great. Totally.
I
mean, so, you know, I what do you guys think? I mean, do you guys think the extras and stuff are worth someone spending, you know, basically $60
at least?
If you're
a fan, yeah, of course.
If you're a fan, yeah. All the fans have pretty much probably already bought it, right?
There you go. Then we're good. We shouldn't have done this podcast.
Yeah, here's the thing, though. If they're going to do this kind of thing, they need to treat it almost, I would say, like a Mondo poster kind of thing.
Right.
Like, you're going to make this much, you're going to release them, and this is why it's special. You know, yeah. I would be extremely upset if I heard, you know, hey, due to popular demand, we printed another 10,000 copies kind of thing. Then, you know, then there's no collectability. Then it's just, you know, you're just stamping them out like license plates.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I agree. That's the one bad thing about it is, like, I'm all for, you know, collector's editions and limited editions. Cause I mean, I even have some. I have the Cemetery Man, only 999 were made, and I have one.
Jealous.
You know, and, you know, that means that's special to me. You know, if they printed a shit ton of others, or, you know, if they expanded it to another 5,000, knocked the price down to $45, I think we'd have some pissed off people. But, yeah, I mean, I just hope that they don't take advantage of the limited edition, because limited edition things is the way it's going, because number one, it's cheaper probably for them to license things out.
Yep.
And two, you know, fuck you guys that are charging $80 for limited edition.
Yeah. that was definitely a week kidding. Where it was like, I'm not going to buy the 2-ply toilet paper. I'll buy. Yeah.
Had to cut some corners. I've been cutting corners for the past 2 months, I feel like. But I'm as a collector, as a Nightbreed fan, you know, warts and all, I really love Nightbreed. I'm glad that I own this. And I think for me, it's you know, it's one of my prized possessions as far as my movie collection goes. This thing, I'm going to own this, you know, forever, and I'm going to take care of it, and it's going to sit proudly on my shelf. So I'm very happy with it.
Are you going to caress it?
I will. I may sleep with it if my wife is gone. I may bring it to bed with me.
Wow.
On the nights that I'm lonely.
Wow.
Well, guys, let's wrap up here. Zach, is there anything coming down the horizon? I know you said you were working on a couple shorts, right?
Yeah. I've got one called 7 Minutes, going to be coming out hopefully soon. It's in the edit, and we, like I said, I'm not sure when this will go live, but this past Sunday, the 26th, a week ago, I finished a new short called Eat It Up. So you look for both of those, hopefully, on the festival circuit.
Awesome.
And my other stuff's online for free. You can watch that, Scum. There's other great stuff. And yeah.
Where can people find that? What's your website?
I don't really have a website. You can find me on Vimeo. Okay. You can find me on Twitter. I'm Zach for Zombies. Talk to me. Tweet at me. Ask me questions and bug me. And I'm lonely.
All right. Well, everyone who's listened, they know where to find us. We're over at Scream_cast on Twitter or thescreamcast.com. And, of course, links to our personal Twitters, you can find us through there.
Twitter.
Twitters.
Don't
we're
stop.
We're also on Facebook, Screamcast on Facebook, so find us there. Gentlemen, all right, that's going to do it for this week's show. We'll talk to all of you guys next week. Bye-bye.
See ya.
Oh, don't tell me you're leaving. The party's just begun.
Yeah. Wait, let me do that.
All right. Are we good?